In our last case this morning, 2023-0470, Columbus Bar Association versus Douglas Bolson, Jr. On behalf of the relator, Amy Flowers, the other side has waived argument today.
Good morning. Chief Justice Kennedy, distinguished members of the court, may it please the court, Amy Flowers of the law firm of Ice Miller here on behalf of the relator, Columbus Bar Association. The issues on appeal today are actually quite limited. The relator does not oppose the Ohio Board of Professional Conduct's suspension recommendation of Mr. Bolson. Instead, the relator does have two distinct objections. One objection relates to the restitution in this matter, while the other objection is a procedural issue that has an overarching and broad impact on all future hearings.
Let me ask you about that.
Yes.
I mean, to appeal something, you need to be aggrieved by it, not the attorney, but the client. What possible stake? I mean, it seems like I read this brief and it's just asking for some advisory opinion by the court, asking the court to clarify a rule that seems perfectly clear.
Your Honor, that's a great point and question. We would submit that the rule is clear to us. However, the panel at this hearing, while we were not aggrieved, did warn that all future hearings would be interpreted, the rule would be interpreted to mean as they understand it to mean.
Right.
Which
So you follow what the panel says. That's the way the judicial system works, right? I mean, you don't get to appeal something until you have had, you've suffered some injury by it.
Your Honor, we would argue that deference as it relates to the rule should be afforded to this court. It is this court's rule, not the panel's rule. It is this rule.
Well,
the rule
just like
the
trial court, when a trial court interprets the rule, the people in front of it have to follow it until a higher court says otherwise, right? There's no difference, right?
Yes, Your Honor, I agree with that, and I would submit that the panel in this instance did make a finding and did make a conclusion as it relates to that rule. And while they
did that aggrieve the clients? Did that aggrieve the Columbus Bar Association in relation to this matter? If not, there's no standing to appeal.
Your Honor, this issue in particular we recognize as unique, and certainly anticipated this court's question of whether or not procedurally we were proper before the court as it relates to today's hearing. This issue has every capability of repetition evading review. If the hearing panel would have, but for their amendments.
Well, the issue isn't mootness, though, right? So that's not.
And yes, Your Honor, so if and when this occurs again and the panel dismisses the complaint because they interpret the rule to mean.
Then you would be able to appeal.
No, Your Honor, we are not able to appeal. If they dismiss that complaint, we do not have recourse and we are not able to appeal. And that is what is motivating our push and our request that this court clarify what its intended interpretation of the rule is.
So, but as you just stated when you began, there are rules of this court, and have you made the request that the court, through its rulemaking power, examine the rule and modify language or amend language?
Not to my knowledge, Your Honor.
Okay.
Instead, we have submitted what we understand to be the correct interpretation of this rule and the best interpretation of this rule. This rule was amended back in 2019 to establish Bar Council's clear responsibility to oversee the litigation that its certified grievance committee members, as well as Bar Council, undertake before the panels or before the board. However, at the hearing, Judge Cook noted, and I think also highlights the importance of clarification and our need for clarification of this court's interpretation of the rule, is, quote, "To my knowledge, no other panel chairs have enforced the rule in the manner that I am. I recognize that." And so I think that there's clear confusion on what this court, at least clear confusion from that panel and potentially the board, on what that rule is intended to mean. We would submit that bar counsel was in compliance with the rule at that hearing, and that we have always been in compliance with the rule. That compliance with the rule means so long as bar counsel oversees every aspect of the pre-complaint process, the complaint process, the hearing process, so long as bar counsel is responsible for litigating those matters before the panel, that bar counsel should be able to choose who is litigating that case at the hearing. The Certified Grievance Committee, the Columbus Bar Association Certified Grievance Committee, is made up of incredible diverse skilled attorneys, and we should certainly be able to utilize those folks when exercising the prosecution of these complaints. And so we would submit that our interpretation is the most effective, practical, fundamental approach, just as county prosecutor's office or the Ohio Attorney General's office. The Ohio Attorney General is responsible for the hearings and litigating those matters, just as bar counsel should be responsible for the folks who are litigating the matters on their behalf. And so we would submit that there is confusion, and that we would request that this court certainly clarify that and their intended interpretation in deferring to this court as to what their rule means and not how the panel interprets that rule. The second issue on objection relates to restitution in this matter. As this court knows, the underlying facts for this grievance spanned nearly a decade. From 2013 until 2022, the victim in this matter, the grievant, Ms. Maggard, was deprived of $19,427 for that near 10-year period. She was deprived of that money because Mr. Bolson, in his misconduct, which the board found, the panel found, his misconduct deprived her of those funds for that near decade. And so, relator submits, and we're requesting that this court award her restitution based on the sufficient evidence that we presented at the hearing, enabling a fact finder to find that she's certainly entitled to restitution of a certain figure.
What if she had gotten that $19,000 in a timely manner and traveled the world with the funds?
Your Honor, if she would have received the $19,427, say in 2013, or even 2014, the next year, or even 2015, she would have had the purchasing power of those funds during that time. We certainly know that a dollar today is worth more than a dollar tomorrow. And so because she was deprived of that purchasing power, we requested that she receive restitution as it relates to being deprived of those funds.
And how do you measure that? Wasn't your evidence more so the interest that would have been earned at a low level or a high level had she been given the funds in a timely manner?
Yes, Your Honor. So what we did was we put on an expert, Karen Cookson, who's a financial advisor who's been doing this for over 40 years and works specifically with folks who receive QDRO funds. She testified what a reasonable investor would have received had they received that money in 2013.
But doesn't that assume, we have to assume that the wife, ex-wife, would have, your client, the grievant in this case, would have made an investment?
We know from her testimony that had she received the money timely, she would have invested it. However, we were unable to recreate exactly how she would have invested it. So instead, we used precise time, precise dollar amount that she would have received, and used an expert to demonstrate what that would have looked like had she have had that money timely in 2013 instead of in 2022. And so Ms. Cookston testified to what a reasonable investor, what a reasonable person, and what a reasonable rate of return would have been. And we would submit that that is sufficient evidence for this court to find and award restitution to Ms. Maggard. She certainly is due some restitution as it relates to being deprived of $19,427 for a near decade.
That's true, but is restitution from a disciplinary action the right vehicle for that?
Your Honor, it is. We would submit that that's the best vehicle in this instance. And this court certainly has authority under GovBar Rule 5, Section 17D1 to award restitution. I think, too, as the panel noted, and as the board noted in their report, that a civil malpractice lawsuit might also be a proper vehicle for restitution. However, we would submit that that is going to continue to further harm Ms. Maggart. She would have to hire an attorney, pay a retainer. She'd have to find someone to even take a case of that low value in order to pursue that vehicle. And so they're not mutually exclusive, but we would certainly argue that the disciplinary process in this manner, given that it had already been 10 years, nearly 10 years that she was deprived the money, that this is a proper form and this is a proper vehicle to award that restitution.
If she were to bring a subsequent malpractice suit, she would incur attorney's fees either by the hour or on recovery.
I think that's right, Your Honor. I think that depending on who she was able to hire, either an hourly rate or a retainer with respect to that suit, I think that she would also, without knowing it's not in the record, I think that she would also be facing at this point statute of limitations issue as well. And so
essentially she would lose money from whatever amount would be determined to be restitution with the addition of what the expert opined would be added to that, correct?
Yes, Your Honor, and I think that the relator at the hearing put forth the best evidence that there is to by a clear and convincing standard that she is due restitution as it relates to being deprived of those funds. So yes, she would incur additional financial harm, more time, certainly a longer delay in being able to be made whole.
And what is our precedent on adding to that, whether it be interest, consumer price index, or something like this with the QDRAW?
I'm sorry, I don't understand the question.
Well, what is our precedent in adding to the amount that the individual says that they should be able to recover, or that that is their actual remedy? What's our precedent in basically multiplying that amount by some factor or adding to it because of the passage of time?
Your Honor, I know specifically that there's a case where this court, the respondent was Peck, where this court did award restitution above and beyond what the hearing panel and the board ultimately concluded. As far as precedent, I don't have a list of cases, Your Honor, with respect to what this court has done. I know what this court is able to do with respect to having the authority to award restitution in this matter. And again, submitting that we have provided sufficient evidence for this court to find that she is due restitution. And we're not asking for the high end. We're not asking that she receive an award of restitution that was the result of an aggressive investment. We're asking for the average, for the middle, for what would ultimately be fair to the aggrieved, to Ms. Maggart in this instance.
Thank you.
And so, Your Honors, given that, what Ms. Cookston was able to testify to is, again, what the gain would have or should have been. Again, we're talking about 10 years, nearly 10 years, a decade, of misconduct and negligence at the hands of Mr. Bolson for someone who was vulnerable and harmed, for which the board found, and requesting that she receive restitution to make her whole and compensate her for that harm.
Is there anything she could have done to mitigate that loss?
Your Honor, what she did was call, email, visit. She was very, what I would characterize as diligent in trying to get that money. The record is very clear, and Mr. Bolson also notes that there were several calls made. There were emails, not just by Ms. Maggart, but her then fiance and now husband, Mr. Maggart. I mean, they even took a whole day off work to go down there because they weren't getting a response from Mr. Bolson. We eventually find—
At some point, would it have been in her better interest to cut ties with Mr. Bolson? Mm-hmm.
Yes, Your Honor, and that was something that Ms. Maggart explored, and she testified that she essentially, and I'm not sure what part in the process, I apologize, but she did say at one point, let me go to another attorney. I don't know if she had any retainer left at that point, but let me go to another attorney and let me have someone else just finish this, because as we understand that Cudro is a simple form. And Mr. Bolson testified that he was just filling in demographic information. He wasn't even doing the bulk of the work, but he had to get the ball rolling. And so she did. She wanted to go to another attorney, and he insisted, no, let me finish the job. I'm going to get it done. And then continued to promise her that he was going to. She trusted him. She stayed with him, and to her detriment. And I think for that and for the harm that she has caused, she certainly due restitution. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement, and you'll receive a decision from the court. Marshall, close the court, please.
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.